Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
According to the UN, the Rohingyas are one of the most persecuted minorities in the world. Only now has the media turned its attention to their plight at the hands of a country led by Nobel Peace Prize laureate Aung San Suu Kyi. Yet the signs of this genocide have been visible for years. In this updated edition, Dr. Azim Ibrahim chronicles the events leading up to the current final cleansing of the Rohingya population. The Rohingyas Inside Myanmar's Genocide is an updated book. Delighted to be joining me live on the line from the US, the author, Dr. Azim Ibrahim. Dr. Azim, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's a genocide that's come to the West's attention really only in the last 6 months. How long has this been going on, and what was the catalyst that brought this to the West's attention, do you think?
So the Rohingya have been described as the most persecuted minority in the world by the UN. The persecution of the Rohingya has been going on for over half a century now. It really started in 1962 when there was a military coup by the military, the army chief General Ne Win, and he tried to implement a socialist program, a communist manifesto, which he called the Burmese Road to Socialism. And this was a complete economic disaster. So he did what a lot of dictators do in that situation, is that he tried to find scapegoats on which to blame all the ills of society on. And the Rohingya minority, who look different, have different features, different skin colour, different language, different religion, they were the minority of choice for blame. And as time went on, General Ne Win, he tried to make the country much more overtly Buddhist in his nature, saying that, you know, only Buddhists can be loyal citizens to this country. And he passed a number of laws, including the 1982 Citizenship Act, which stripped all the Rohingya of their nationality, making them some of the largest stateless people around the world. And since that time, they have faced wave after wave of violence. The most recent wave is probably the worst that we have seen. Started in 2017, in September 2017. And what we have seen is over the last few months is almost two-thirds of the entire Rohingya population being ethnically cleansed and forcibly displaced from Myanmar into Bangladesh. So the United Nations is now coming down to describing this as a genocide. I always believed it was a genocide. I described it myself as a slow-motion genocide, but this has now been accelerated. And the Myanmar authorities are determined to rid their country of all the Rohingya as quickly as possible.
I mean, give me a little idea of the geography about where these people live. I mean, is it very much in the centre of the country, or are they hidden away, out of sight, out of mind, if you will?
No, essentially the Rohingya are primarily located in one district called the Rakhine or Arakan. They're basically on the border of Bangladesh, which makes it quite easy for them to be ethnically cleansed. But primarily, you know, it's about 2 million of them. Nobody really knows the precise number, because theoretically they don't even exist. Nobody's ever taken a census. But the numbers vary to about 2 million of them, between 1.2 to 2 million. 60,000 having been displaced. Nobody even knows how left in Myanmar, in Burma. Some estimates are there's about 120,000, but we do know that many of those that are left are now being victims of brutality and starvation.
And what has been, do you think, the catalyst for this particular round, and why do you think it's taken so long for the West to react? Do you think that perhaps because that Myanmar is now led ostensibly by a Nobel Peace Prize laureate, that they were looking the other way?
I think you're absolutely right. One of the reasons why, and I've been meeting policymakers on both sides of the Atlantic, And one of the reasons why there's been complete inaction from the West is that Myanmar has emerged from decades of brutal military dictatorship, and it's only recently had elections which brought Aung San Suu Kyi, the Nobel laureate, to power. So one of the reasons why there's been complete inaction from the West is that nobody wants to put too much pressure on Myanmar unless it reverts back to being a military dictatorship if there's a military coup. I believe that's a myth that's been perpetuated by Aung San Suu Kyi and her supporters. The reality is that the military is in a very good situation at the moment. They have the holy grail of politics. They have power without any accountability, so they can get on with all the ethnic cleansing and the genocide, you know, to their heart's content without any international pressure. And the last thing they want to do is reinvite sanctions back and international scrutiny. So as it stands at the moment, Aung San Suu Kyi is providing, is like a shield for the military, for the military action. She's basically providing cover for the military action.
I mean, is there anything that you think that she is able to do, or is she very much, I mean, she was under house arrest for so long. We remember the Amnesty International campaigns. We remember various rock stars, you know, singing and praising her virtues. And when she was released, it seemed like this was a new dawn for the country. But yet, perhaps this is a false dawn then.
Well, one, I fully acknowledge she does not directly control the military, even though she is the de facto leader of the country. She does not directly control the military. But one of the reasons why this is happening now, you know, in 2017, and it didn't happen before, is because the military realised that Aung San Suu Kyi defends them in public. So, for example, in March of 2017, the United Nations produced a report to say that 52% of Rohingya women had been raped. So that's the majority of them. Aung San Suu Kyi said that this is fake rape. And so when the United Nations passed a resolution to have a full fact-finding mission, Aung San Suu Kyi said, this will not be very helpful. And she refused, as the foreign minister of that country, she refused to give the UN visas. And she's still continuously refusing to allow any UN into the country. And when the BBC's Fergal Keane asked her about ethnic cleansing in the country, she said ethnic cleansing is too strong a term to use for what's going on. And she's gone on literally over and over again defending the military, saying that both sides are equally to blame for the violence, which is the moral equivalent of saying both the Jews and the Nazis were equally to blame for the Holocaust, or both the blacks and the whites were to blame for apartheid in South Africa. Most of her supporters would recognise that as moral bankruptcy. So this is why this is happening in 2017. You know, this is why it was escalated, is because the military realised that they have a supporter in Aung San Suu Kyi, and even though she might not control the military, as I fully acknowledge, she does have a very powerful weapon, probably the most powerful weapon, which is her voice. As a moral conscience of that country, as a Nobel laureate, as the most famous citizen of that country, she can speak up. She won the elections by 79% of the vote. She's practically worshipped in that country. She could easily take some of the people along with her. You know, it won't be easy, but she can certainly do that. But she has never even spoken up for the Rohingya. In fact, she even refuses to use the word Rohingya. She refers to them as Muslims from Rakhine. And she has continuously even refused to acknowledge that they exist.
And I suppose that one of the things is, in this current climate of, you know, anti-Islam that we are experiencing from the West, it's very easy to say, well, you know, they're Muslims, therefore they are extremists, therefore they are promoting terrorism, therefore they must be pursued.
Absolutely, and this is another reason why there's been inaction. I mean, the Myanmar authorities claim that they're fighting against militant Islamists. And they claim that they are reacting to a terrorist attack by a group called ARSA, the Arakan Rohingya Salvation Army, on the 25th of September, and they are reacting to that. But now there's considerable evidence emerging, including from various human rights groups, that many of the massacres that happened in the most recent wave of violence were happening weeks before this single terrorist incident, which they claim that they're reacting to. And the reality is that the Rohingya have actually been the least violent group in all of Myanmar. Myanmar, since independence in 1948, has been at war with every single ethnic group. They have the longest-running civil wars in the country. When Aung San Suu Kyi came to power, she set up a commission called the Pong Long II which was to examine the civil wars in the country, and she invited all the ethnic groups. But the Rohingya were not invited because they were not seen as being a militant group. They were not seen as being violent. They did not have a militant branch to them. So this idea that they're militants and they're extremists simply does not stand up to the evidence.
So what you're saying is there is a group for these people then? Are they fighting back, or are they just extremely passive in this whole situation?
Most of them have been by far and large passive. There is a militant group. It's very under-resourced and very poorly equipped. And I know this because I've watched almost all of their videos that they make, and you can see just from their videos, if you've ever watched any of these militant videos, you know, when they lead out a statement, there's usually one guy at the front leading a statement, and everybody around them is holding rocket launchers and machine guns, and the purpose is to demonstrate power and strength. If you watch the ARSA videos, it's actually very different. There's one guy leading a statement, and the rest of them around him, two guys with Kalashnikovs, and the rest of them are holding bamboo sticks, and they're all bare feet. You know, they don't have shoes either. So this is a very poorly equipped and strategically and tactically insignificant entity. And the response of the Myanmar military has been completely overwhelming. Just the Associated Press yesterday released some information in which five new mass graves have been discovered. And the Myanmar military was entering into villages, you know, with the predetermined intent to carry out massacres. They brought shovels and diggers with them. And they also brought acid with them to dissolve the faces and hands of the dead so that they can't be recognized. So this demonstrates once again, and the United Nations High Commissioner actually said that this has all the hallmarks of a genocide, that this was pre-planned, it was organized and systematic.
How difficult is it to get information then out of Myanmar, and how difficult is it for somebody like yourself to compile this into a book?
Well, when I wrote the book was published in 2016. I went to Myanmar myself. I spent a number of days in Myanmar. I went to the camps. I was smuggled into the camps. Now to get into Myanmar is impossible. They don't allow anybody in. Even foreigners and diplomats and so on are kept away as far as possible. And the reason why is simply because they don't really want anyone to know what's actually going on. Even the Pope, if you recall, when he visited, he was warned very specifically not to even use the word Rohingya, because it's a word that they do not recognize. And he was warned that there'll be a massive backlash against the Catholic minority in Myanmar if he uses the word. So Western leaders, they go to Myanmar and they'll have meetings with various politicians and so on, but they're not actually allowed into the Rakhine district where the massacres are actually happening.
And what sort of pressure is this putting on neighbouring countries such as Bangladesh when they have sort of Rohingyas basically trying to get into the country?
Well, Bangladesh over the last, you know, is now host to over almost 1 million Rohingya refugees. Now, they're all located in one particular area in Cox Bazar, which is on the border. And, you know, this is a real difficult challenge for Bangladesh, which is one of the poorest countries in the world, one of the most densely populated countries in the world. Bangladesh is very keen on getting rid of the Rohingya as soon as possible, simply because they can't host those kinds of numbers and they can't absorb those kinds of numbers. You know, the refugees are costing $1 billion a year. And at the moment, the international community is assisting, but very soon they will probably get donor fatigue and that will dry up. And so Bangladesh is going to be left with this problem. So they are very keen on trying to repatriate the Rohingya as quickly as possible. But the reality is that Myanmar has no intention, despite the agreements that they're making, they have no intention of taking back the Rohingya. They have spent half a century trying to get rid of them. And where would they go back to? All the villages have been burnt down, as has been confirmed by various human rights organisations, including Human Rights Watch, who obtained satellite imagery that show the majority of the villages have been burnt to the ground. The land has been seized and has been redistributed to the locals and is already being harvested. So they have nothing to actually go back to. And Myanmar has made the conditions by which to repatriate the Rohingya to allow them to return, they're practically impossible to meet. You know, they're designed specifically so that nobody actually comes back.
So, This seems like almost textbook ethnic cleansing, because, and we are familiar with that term when it first came out in the 90s in former Yugoslavia. I mean, you kill large numbers of the people, you take their land, and then you make it impossible for them to return.
Absolutely, and not only did they expel the Rohingya, they mined the border, they put mines on the border to make sure that they don't come back. And even when I was in the camps myself, you know, I asked the Rohingya if they're willing to go back, and all of them actually said yes, they would go back, but only if they're given citizenship of the land of their birth and if they're given equal rights. And the criteria that the Myanmar has articulated to take them back is designed specifically to be impossible to meet. For example, the Rohingya have to produce birth certificates of their grandfather. A time when birth certificates were not issued, they have to produce documentation of which village they were actually from, villages that have all been burnt down, and they have to produce documentation of where they crossed the border from Myanmar into Bangladesh. So basically the equivalent of passports and passport stamps. They're actually designed specifically to ensure that none of them ever come back.
What are conditions like in the camps that you visited? I mean, we've seen the pictures on various television news reports. I mean, are they even worse than we can imagine that we see on our TV screens?
The camps in Bangladesh where the Rohingya are now located, the absolutely horrific conditions you can imagine. You have almost, these are now the largest refugee camps in the world. I remember when I was there just a few weeks ago, I climbed on top of a hill and I could see as far as I could see, and the camp stretched well over the horizon, as far as the eye could see. You have 1 million people living on handouts, and out of the 700,000, over 380,000 are children, many of them without parents, because the parents have been killed or they're missing. And even though they're in camps and they're getting handouts from the World Food Programme, there are many children dying of malnutrition, because the diet that's provided by the World Food Programme is very starch-heavy. It's not a balanced diet. And these children don't have access to education. They don't have healthcare facilities. They're very scarce. So you can imagine that the situation that they're in is quite catastrophic. And the Rohingya that are remaining, that have been left behind in Myanmar, nobody has access to them at all. Now, they have been completely shut off. And there's some news journalists that managed to get some information out from them, and apparently many of those camps have been surrounded and the people are being now starved out.
I mean, if you're going to these camps as you were doing and reporting on this situation, and you're dealing with a government that is basically run by a military, though it plays lip service to being a democracy, did you not fear for your own safety and putting stuff like this, these shocking reports, in a book?
Yeah, well, I went in 2014, 2015. I went around that time. It was a little bit easier to get in and out then. I don't think it's possible for me to go back now. I'm on their no entry list. Back then, it was a little bit easier to get in and out. You know, I had a guide, I had a translator, a fixer that could basically smuggle me in and out of the camps. And it wasn't as stringent as it is now. And now there is obviously these massacres and mass graves. So it's a bit more tricky to get in and out, and I wouldn't attempt it now.
We've mentioned before that Myanmar has several ethnic groups and several ethnic tribes. Are there any other groups that are being targeted, or is it just solely the Rohingya? And if not, shouldn't these other ethnic groups be concerned that the way that the generals are acting, because it could be them next?
No, that's a great question, and you're absolutely right. You know, one of the reasons that this is happening is that many of the elite in Burma, you know, they believe that Burma is a Buddhist country. And a very common question is that how could Buddhists engage in such gross kind of violence? After all, these are people that even when they have bad thoughts, they have to cleanse themselves. But the Buddhism they follow in Myanmar and Burma is not the Buddhism you and I may be familiar with. It's not the Buddhism of the Dalai Lama, for example. They do not recognize the Dalai Lama. Many of them believe that the Dalai Lama is just a fraud. It's a form of Buddhism called Theravada Buddhism, which is very militant in its nature. You know, they believe that all other ideologies and religions have to be kept in check and have to be suppressed for Buddhism to thrive. The Rohingya minority just happens to be the largest minority, and they stand out because they actually look different, they have darker skin, and they have different language. different futures. But as I said earlier, almost every ethnic minority has been at war with the central government since independence. And now there's evidence urging that this emboldened military, now that they've essentially gotten away with the ethnic cleansing of the Rohingya and the genocide of the Rohingya, they're now turning their attention onto the other groups. So there's other, the Christian minority group called the Karen, there's the Kashin, the Shan, and now the military is now increasing their offensive. And this is something that I've argued previously, is that once the military is finished with the Rohingya, they will then turn their attention onto other minorities. Because they believe that Myanmar is a Buddhist country, it's only Buddhists that can be loyal citizens to this country, and it just happens to have those ethnic minorities in it. And it's not a multi-ethnic country. And this is an ideology that Aung San Suu Kyi actually shares. You know, almost all the elite in Myanmar believe in this. She may not direct the military, personally herself, but this is something that she has certainly bought into.
If you had sway and you could say, right, we need to do something about this now, what would your advice be to, if you could get hold of the UN or whoever, would it be, we need to step in here, we need to put sanctions back on, we need to shine an even bigger spotlight on this? Previously, you called your book The Hidden Genocide. It's now just the genocide that is going on before our very eyes.
I think I would do all of those things. I think sanctions have to be reintroduced. I think Myanmar has to be referred to the ICC, the International Criminal Court, for committing acts of genocide. And there's more than enough evidence at the moment, you know, to even demonstrate that this was all pre-planned, systematic. You know, I've met with a number of experts and researchers on the ground that have indicated to me the amount of evidence that they've collected in terms of how the military organised rape camps in every village and how they went from village to village using the exact same tactics. This was all pre-planned, and I think there's more than enough evidence now emerging to say that this was a clear case of genocide, and I think Myanmar should be taken to the International Criminal Court. I think the sanctions should be reintroduced, and at the moment they've gotten away with it. You know, there's no other way to describe it. They have managed to ethnically cleanse the Rohingya and commit genocide against them, and Western action from the UN has been extremely, extremely weak. The United Nations representative, Special Rapporteur to Myanmar, yesterday gave her closing statement, and it was the first time ever, I believe, this has happened, that she gave her closing statement from South Korea, and because she's no longer permitted, and this is the most senior UN official, is no longer permitted back into the country, and she had to give her statement from a foreign country, and I don't believe that's ever happened before. And it's hugely embarrassing and humiliating for the UN, but once again, this was Aung San Suu Kyi who decided not to let her back into the country, Yang Li, the UN Special Rapporteur. So this is a very difficult situation, and it's been grossly humiliating, and once again, it's demonstrated that the United Nations and all international mechanisms have failed to prevent genocide when it was so easily predictable.
The book is called The Rohingyas, Inside Myanmar's Genocide. It's out now by Hearst. It's by Dr. Azeem Ibrahim. Dr. Azeem, if people want to find out more about the subject or follow you, is there a website can they visit? Is there social media they can connect with you or follow you on?
Yeah, you can go to the website, rohingyabook.com. It's very simple, rohingyabook.com. Or follow me on Twitter, which is just at Azeem Ibrahim, my first name and second name.
Well, we'll wait to see what developments happen in 2018. Dr. Azeem Ibrahim, thank you for your time today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce, who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk.
Crazy weather we're having.
No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.